Ngozi Were, the founder and executive director of Community Life Project. I also coordinate the Reclaim Niger platform, which is a grassroots mass movement of Community Life Project. We started Community Life Project in 1992. It was started as a result of the marginalization of poor communities, disadvantaged communities who were outside the mainstream communication channels. And at the time, HIV/AIDS was already a pandemic, but there was a lot of silence surrounding it in Nigeria, no response from the government and even from civil society. Just a few, one or two non-governmental organizations were doing things targeting long-distance truck drivers. So we felt that HIV/AIDS was a population-based pandemic, given the nature of the virus, and that everyone needed to have that information, and that the health system needed to provide a response for it. So we decided to target and get people who are outside mainstream communication channels, who are disadvantaged and marginalized, to take HIV/AIDS preventive information and education to them, and also to try to see how we could link them to services. So Community Life Project is all about inclusion. It's all about trying to end inequality in access to services, in access to decision-making processes, in inequality, in expression of voice. Over the first 10 years, we worked on about 80 different issues, all of concern to grassroots people. We kind of developed a model of grassroots inclusive participatory development and governance in our community, where we started in Isolo, and then we spread and scaled it to replicate it in other parts of Lagos State. And eventually we replicated it in the 6 geopolitical zones. We then decided that it was time to go big and nationwide and use that model that we have built to mobilize grassroots communities to do something about cleaning up the electoral system, about promoting electoral integrity. And that was how we then created Reclaim Niger movement towards the 2011 elections. That model is very simple. It's not about engaging individuals, although individuals are part and parcel of what we do, but it's about harnessing the social capital we have in the society, the existing social structures, the associational life of our people. They are all organized. They all have their associations that they themselves have created, and they are running it and they are funding it, so they don't need money from people. So you find that the mechanics, the vulcanizers, the car battery chargers, the carpenters, the welders, the building material suppliers, they are all organized. Apart from the market associations, they organize themselves, they are self-funding. And then you have the faith-based organizations, you have the schools in the community. So all the model entails is going to partner with them around any issue that we think is important. In the case at the time we started was HIV, which they didn't know about. We put that on their agenda. So in 2010, we decided to create a movement which we call Reclaim Niger, which is reclaim the country from the politicians that's been misgoverning the country. And we decided to go into the political and governance space and try to influence things there. When we created Reclaim Niger, our objective was simple. The elections had been progressively worse in terms of credibility. From 1999, 2003 was worse than 99, 2007 was worse than 2003. And we said, okay, since we had a head of INEC, Professor Atahiru Jega, who was a person from civil society, from the labor trade union movement, and somebody we knew to be credible and a committed patriot, we felt that was an opportunity to engage INEC, since we also have experience working with government agencies on the supply side. So we decided to team up with INEC, and our objective at Reclaim Niger and CLP was simple. We wanted to reverse that trend of one election being worse than the other. And we knew that key, central to doing that, or critical to that, achieving that, is having a credible voter register, which we didn't have. And INEC had introduced technology which it wanted to use for voter registration. And we also introduced technology. So we pioneered technology on a scale to allow citizen participation and voice in working with the electoral body to deliver a tangible outcome. For us, that first outcome was a credible register. So we adapted the Ushahidi technology, which is a reporting, incident reporting platform, and you crowdsource to report on that platform. So we adapted the technology, we developed it, and we built in voice telephony and linked it up with our SMS services, because the grassroots people we work with, they didn't have smartphones. You know, they were not internet savvy. We used Ushahidi and the SMS based solutions and the voice telephony to make sure that we ended their exclusion and promoted inclusion in the digital space. So what we did was to monitor the voter registration, and we had the Okada communities in our network take to the street in 22 cities, getting people to go out and register, telling them that this time it was going to be different. And so when it was the grassroots people doing the outreach and speaking to their fellow grassroots people, that galvanized a lot of people to go and register. And they were collating and sending to us reports about what was happening as they were registering. And that report was being fed to INEC, and INEC was using that to improve on what it was doing. Then the other thing we wanted to achieve with Reclaim, having done the voter registration, was also to help INEC by sending incident reports from polling units where citizens were voting. So the members of our grassroots network, along with others, because INEC published our platform, Ushahidi and Reclaim reporting numbers, they gave it to the media and that was published. And so a lot more citizens than those within our network sent in reports. And these reports were being Google mapped on the platform. So in the situation room in INEC, they have people looking at those maps and picking up where the incidents are, where they needed to troubleshoot, and so on. Having done that, the space was open for popular participation, and it's now a culture and a tradition that citizens can send tweets or any incident they observe, phone calls and all, to electoral officers and to INEC on election day. We're also very active in the election situation room as one of the key people. And we helped a lot in those elections and 2015 in verifying incidents. So if there were reports even that came from different sources, not us, and about something going on, especially something really serious, we were asked through our Reclaim platform. We had people everywhere on ground who could verify whether those incidents actually occurred. But beyond elections, post-election, because we find that it's one thing to have voice in the voting and electoral process, but citizens also have to have voice in the governance process and governance decision-making. Post-election, what we've been doing is civic education of people in our grassroots network. And we are also being strategic. We are looking at the people having a voice in deciding where the resources go in their communities. The budget is, for us, a very strategic mechanism through which the people can have voice. It's going to create a new culture within government and how business is done. So we are looking at participatory budgeting. And since 2012, we've been working on participatory budgeting. And in many communities, we are having citizens engage with government officials, because we're also training them, the budget officers, heads of departments, and the council managers, the heads of council. These are the civil servants, so that they're allowing people in town hall meetings called by Reclaim Niger. So this is our people expressing agency in the Reclaim movement and being the ones calling these town hall meetings and collating the needs of their communities and submitting this to the local governments to include in their budgets. Well, there are environmental challenges, talking about the political environment and climate. When it comes to election observing, for instance, and incident reporting, there are places where it's difficult for our people to do so because of the violence, the intimidation, and the thuggery that happens within the system. We also face the challenge of people not being able to support credible candidates they know in their communities will do a good job because they know the people, you know, getting into office or emerging as candidates because of the way primaries are run and the way candidates emerge. So that's decided by godfathers or decided by the money bags. And so there's the frustration that candidates that grassroots people or people in our movement would have preferred to come out, they are not able to emerge as candidates. So there are those bottlenecks that have to do with the legal framework, the constitutional framework, and of course the practices of the key political actors, the members of the political class themselves. Our response to that is also to ensure that the voice of the grassroots people in our Reclaim Nigeria movement is heard, that we are part and parcel of attempts to reform the frameworks that govern policy and legal frameworks and constitutional framework. We team up with other civil society to pressure and carry out advocacy at the national and subnational levels. So that is one challenge we faced and the way that we work. The other thing we have experienced is that there is a tension between the civil servants within government, because we are trying to influence the culture, trying to influence the budget-making culture. You find duplication of projects being in communities because they are not matching the real needs of the community. You find projects that are abandoned. There is a fraud going on, projects that are inflated. As the communities are trying to work with the government to address these issues, we notice the tension between the civil servants and the politicians, the elected officers. Sometimes the elected officers want to control the money and have their own agenda. They want to steer services to their own communities or their localities. And navigating that is one of the challenges that we face. We also have the issue of corruption within the civil service itself, because sometimes also the civil servants, it's not all the time that this tension is because it's a tension over how to deliver services. Sometimes it's a tension over struggle for misappropriation of the funds. As an institution, one of our, I won't call it regrets or frustration, you know, those are strong words, but one of the things that we've not been able to see is the scale. We have capacity to work at scale all over the country, and our work is not always at that scale because of the resources. Resources are not really available. We're able to cover all the 36 states and over 200 local governments with the Reclaim popular participation in the electoral process because we had enough funding to carry that scale. We've not been able to have that kind of funding to take our participatory budgeting work to that scale all over the country. I think this is one of the challenges that we are facing in the programmatic area.
Well, the major challenge, we already know the constraints that the electoral body faces, how to unbundle it and how to get the different stakeholders living up to their responsibilities. Those are issues, you know, for instance, who's supposed to prosecute, who's supposed to arrest people who violate electoral laws. But I think that if we are talking about how to have the desired outcome from our electoral process, which desired outcome is to have decent candidates that are going to put governance on the agenda, I think that the culture within political parties, that is internal party democracy, I would say that that is one big headache, you know, one big nut to crack. And one is not able to see how the reforms that we are making now, how they are really going to address that issue of lack of internal party democracy. The fact that people dictate what candidates will emerge and that meritorious candidates don't get to emerge if they are not cronies of the big money bags or the godfathers within the political parties. The other thing is the vote trading on the part of the electorates. Tracing the evolution of vote trade, it used to be the politicians inducing the electorate. Now we have a situation where the electorates are on themselves, either making demands for money for their vote. They themselves are trading their votes.
and selling their votes. So I think that is one challenge to look at. The constitutional reforms over the years has evolved, and I think that a lot of progress has been made there. But there are attitudinal barriers and practices that an entrenched culture that undermine some of the gains, not making it possible for the reforms we are making to bear the kind of fruits that we expect to see. So this, for me, yes, are the challenges that I see.
Well, I think first we have to push that thing be signed into law. Because the fact that it's been sent to the presidency, we had a president before, it might just sit there. So how to get it signed? We still need to push until it is signed, because it's only after it's been assented to, then we can say, okay, well, we have the act. So I think that's one. Two, it's also to popularize the content of the electoral reforms that we are making. We need to get that out to the electorate to broaden the base of those who understand what is happening and what we can expect and anticipate in the forthcoming elections that we are going to have in 2023, the general elections. And also get more popular participation in the staggered elections that we have in states that are going to have elections in between the general election cycle. I think that because we're at the grassroots and the local government is really the level of government that makes more sense to the people in our movement and the communities we serve in terms of the excluded and marginalized communities. I think that CSOs, we need to pay more attention. We paid so much attention to the national level. We need to pay more attention to the state level and to legislation around governance at the state and the local government level in terms of the relationship between states and local governments and how you structure it, because you see that the elections into the local governments, they are a complete sham. They're just laughable. And the state independent electoral commissions are being appointed by state governors and being told exactly what to do and dictated to. I think that more civil society voices need to move into that space. We need to go and do some of the cleanup work that we've done at the national level, do some of the advocacy for the reforms we need, either that the CX, the State Independent Electoral Commissions, become independent and that they are empowered to deliver, or that we have a different kind of arrangement in terms of how elections work. People have been advocating, some people advocate that INEC should conduct even the local government elections. But one is wondering whether that's the best way to go. If you are talking decentralization, do you want to centralize election again at this federal level, coming to organize municipal elections at the local government? So these are all conversations we need to have. And Reclaim Nigeria, we are going to be driving these conversations going forward, because we have had some experience that we have gotten working in that area that can inform us driving these kind of conversations. I think that we have experience in this country pushing back on repressive experience. And we have the experience of other countries also. I mean, with repressive regimes, yes, contexts are different, but I think the principle is the same. The only thing to do is for citizens to organize themselves and to push back. So a great deal of community organizing is required, a great deal of collaborative work with those forces that are at the receiving end of the repression. The labor unions are key. I know that there are issues of credibility with labor unions and all what is going on, but they have a critical role to play in pushing back on the civic space. If we learn something from the past struggles that the country has had, pushing back against the military, is that youth movement, youth organizations are key. The student movement, the labor movement, and of course the politicians at that time were part of that movement. Now, what we learned from NSAS, we found that when there is a shutdown of economic activities in the country, the government tends to listen more than when citizens just come out and protest. Normally, they will just disperse the protest and go, but the government is forced to listen when it's paying a price socioeconomically. It used to be the labor movement that shuts down the country, but the NSAS was able to strategize
medically do it in Lagos, and I think that happened. So what it shows is that all the civil society stakeholders and organizations, and we need to be as inclusive as possible. With NSAS, it was seen as a youth thing. When this other group is organizing, it's seen as their thing. I think we need to close ranks and have demands that everybody can rally around, because the society is so fragmented now. The ruling class has manipulated religion and ethnicity to an all-time high, as we've seen over the decades. So the social cohesion has been undermined greatly in the country. Social media is also allowing for a lot of misinformation to go around. So we need to build social cohesion. We need to have those key demands that affect everybody in terms of violation of human rights, and push back collectively across regions and across religious divides against that attack. I think that some of what we are doing now, we need to do more of it. Engage the judiciary, even though there's impunity, even though rule of law is being, we cannot but continue to push and call for that. Calling for justice for victims, it's very important. And I think that the recent panel of inquiry report onto the NSAS situation in Lagos has just shown what the possibilities are, and that those are the things we are doing right, and that we continue to push. We now have to push for accountability, that all those indicted will see justice. I think we need to engage outside our country more, sub-regional and international, to expose human rights violations in our country. And I think we need to utilize those opportunities as much as possible. Have a more Pan-African outlook, because the shrinking civil space is happening everywhere. It's happening not just here, it's happening beyond our shores. So we really need to join forces with people. I think we are in a historical moment that was like pre-independence days, when our nationalists across borders, our politicians, decided that, okay, we are going to engage the colonialists and we're going to try to kick them out of Africa. I think that we need to use some of those approaches. In other words, look at our history of struggle and replicate, build on the legacies we have, and then adopt new forms of struggles to meet these times, and then use technology. I know we are using technology already. I think we can leverage technology even more, you know, than we are doing now to push back on the civic space. Now, the 2023 elections and the next election, for me, is another opportunity that we need to leverage. We should try and leverage this election coming seriously to reverse this as much as possible, this attack on the civic space. We do need to rethink the role we've played in the electoral process so far. In these coming elections, are we going to just stop at observing elections and reporting, trying to collate results? Or are we going to take the leadership in driving a different kind of politics, in putting issues again, because our politics are no longer issue-based? Are we going to return to issue-based policies and take the candidates to task on issue of what they're going to do about civil liberties in the country, and really ask the tough questions to influence the quality of candidates that emerge or that the electorate will choose? I think it's a combination of a number of things, but these are some of the things from my end, and I think that civil society activists can do to reclaim the civic space.